Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. At the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Republicans who had once opposed Donald Trump went on stage to give him their strong support, among them Vivek Ramaswamy, Ron DeSantis, and Nikki Haley.
For the sake of our nation, we have to go with Donald Trump.
Five police officers patrolling the convention shot and killed a homeless man who Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman says had a knife in each hand.
The subject refused these commands and charged at the other individual with the knives. At this time, several officers discharged their firearms, subsequently striking the suspect.
The mayor of Paris has taken a plunge in the River Seine to prove that it's clean enough for several swimming events that are to take place in the Summer Olympics, which begin 9 days from now. Dramatic rescue at San Diego's Mission Beach. A 16-year-old trapped in the sand hole up to her neck. After 15 minutes of digging, they got her out. This is ABC News. The 2023 Emmys have just been held in January, but it's already time for this year's nominations. ABC's Jason Nathanson says we'll get the nods later this morning.
Expect some new names, especially on the drama side. With shows like Succession, Better Call Saul gone, and no new season of anything Game of Thrones related eligible, there are a couple of holes for shows like FX's Shogun to dominate.
Do not be fooled by our politeness.
But old standbys like The Crown will likely see a lot of nods for its final season. Prime Video's Mr. and Mrs. Smith might also get some attention. On the comedy side, no Ted Lasso or Barry or Mrs. Maisel, so expect to once again see a lot of love for The Bear.
This is going to be a destination spot.
And Hacks should also do well. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
The awards will be handed out in September. And there may be a good reason to get moving just before you go to bed. Researchers now say a small burst of activity could actually help you sleep better. Working out between 6 in the evening and midnight also linked to a lower risk of premature death. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The Republican National Convention is being held in Milwaukee, and it marks the first time the RNC is in the Badger State. But Wisconsin holds a special spot in the election cycle, with the RNC the second consecutive political convention in Milwaukee. The city was picked for the Democratic National Convention in 2020, but due to COVID, most of it ended up being virtual. Do you know which city has hosted the most political conventions? Philadelphia, Chicago, or Boston? The answer coming up. Political conventions started in the 19th century. It remained the main way to select candidates until 1972, when presidential primaries determined the eventual nominee. Conventions are now considered more of a celebration of the candidate. So do you know which city has held the most political conventions? Chicago. The Republicans have been there 14 times, and the Democratic convention will be hosted there for the 11th time this summer. 50,000 people expected at the RNC in Milwaukee, a nice slice of Wisconsin for the country to see. I'm Terry Barr.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. City leaders and Republican officials promised Milwaukee businesses would get big boosts during the Republican National Convention. But so far, some restaurants and shops say it's been pretty slow. That may be because attendees are on a tight schedule. Delegate Stephanie Susek.
We were kind of, you know, tied up having to be at the convention hall. And so we're looking forward to some more flexibility in the next few days to go out and, you know, just be part of the community and get out to different places.
That schedule is really keeping people busy at Fiserv. Civic Media has a team at the convention. We'll be there all week. And this is such sad news from Door County. Two kids, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, died when the sailboat they were on capsized near Chambers Island. Officials are still searching for their dad, 32-year-old Bill Salnick of Little Suamico. The Door County Sheriff's Office says they'll keep searching until they find him. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, Civic Media News.
The American League wins again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The American League beating the National League 5-3 last night in the All-Star game. The AL has now won 10 of the last 11 games in the Midsummer Classic. No hits for Christian Yelich or William Contreras. The Red Sox Jaron Duran named MVP for his 2-run homer in the 5th to secure the win. NBA, the Bucks losing to the Clippers 112-97 in Summer League play. Milwaukee signing former Raptors guard Gary Trent Jr. Meanwhile, Patrick Beverley deciding to play in the Israeli Basketball League after no offers from the NBA. NFL, Chicago Bears finally reached an agreement with their number one draft pick, quarterback Caleb Williams, who's going to earn a guaranteed $39 million over the next 4 years. Packers quarterback Jordan Love at a youth football camp in Milwaukee asked if he's got a new deal yet.
Brian Gutekunst says he hopes to have a contract extension done with him before the start of camp.
Yeah, you didn't want to talk about it. That's Jordan Love with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy, a bit cooler, and a lot less humid today. We'll get to 74 this afternoon. The wind out of the north at 5 to 15. Tonight, clear 52. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 77 on Friday. Sunshine with a high near 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
Pete Schwabba.
Wednesday night, we will stream live on Facebook and YouTube from 7 to 8 p.m. during the RNC. We will be back in the air live from 8 to 9 p.m. where I welcome comedians Kristen Leidy and Katie Bowman in studio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Back now at 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, July 17th. This is Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nice to have you along. Coming up this hour, we're going to be talking in just a couple of minutes to longtime political strategist Joe Trippi, and we'll ask him his perspective on whether the messages coming out of the Republican convention in Milwaukee are going to be landing with moderate voters. In our homeroom segment, we'll be talking to Jennifer Berkshire, author of The War on Education, and Todd Alba will talk to us later in the show about his experience so far doing his noon to 2 o'clock radio show from inside the convention site. From Rob and Tigerton, and Rob, apologies for missing your note yesterday where you talked about listening to Sean Cassidy back in the day. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton, sunny and 56. Should be a very pleasant day for mowing lawns today in Tigerton. Yesterday after mowing, I had my favorite drink. I believe it's a pina colada he's got here. It was great. I hope someday soon to have a pina colada with my favorite morning radio team. That must be Greg Bach and meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Thank you, Rob.
That would be awesome.
That would be.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I think we have special intro music based on the weather for Brittany's weather segment. That was a long way to go just to get cool for the summer to talk about cooler temperatures. I immediately regret that choice. But Brittany, nice to have you here. And yeah, it is officially comfortably cool.
It really is. I am so excited for it. The relief, no humidity. You can open those windows up. You can shut that AC off. Temperatures today are only going to be rising to the low 70s into northern Wisconsin. Some mid 70s will be felt down to the south, and that's it. We've got a ton of sunshine on tap, only a few clouds building in later on this afternoon, but nothing is going to be in the way. There is going to be no rain in the forecast. The only thing is a little bit of breezy winds, but those are out of the north, and that's what's pulling in these comfortable temperatures. This is going to hold for tomorrow too. We'll get warmer towards the weekend, but I am going to soak up every bit of this.
Every bit of it indeed, because again, if we can get it warmer for the weekend when folks are swimming or not on the water and everything, that's great. Yeah. But for the work week and not having to run the air conditioner, works out just great. Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It. Have a wonderful day. Yeah. It's our pleasure now to be joined by Joe Trippi, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project and longtime political analyst who's joining us now to talk a bit about the Republican National Convention taking place in Milwaukee. Joe Trippi, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Pat.
Well, let's jump right into it because there are some questions we've been asking even since long before the convention that I'd love to get your take on, because Donald Trump is who he is. And despite the major media still not seeming to learn that lesson, we're hearing again this week, oh, he's going to be presidential any day now. Oh, this assassination attempt is going to change him and make him kinder and gentler. We know better, which leads to this question. Will the outcome of the convention be that they actually continue to try to put on a more moderate face? Or, as I've been saying it, are they just going to rip the mask off and say, look, we are who we are, and you should come love our brand of extremism?
No, they'll try to appear like they've changed, but it's not going to wash, I don't think. A gentle reminder that the chants of hang Mike Pence were actual calls to hang Mike Pence. I mean, that, and I think the pick of J.D. Vance is going to reveal over time just how extreme and still a insurrectionist party the Trump-led MAGA Republican Party is. So I think I don't expect this convention to change much. I think this has been essentially a dead heat. It was a dead heat after the debate performance. It's going to be a dead heat. I think the assassination attempt is not going to, first of all, the first two early polls show that hasn't changed that sort of, margin either. And I certainly don't think so far what I've seen in the convention is going to change that. And I do think there's some clear cracks, I think, in the Republican coalition as well that were caused a lot by J.D. Vance's pick. I mean, I think a lot, and the booing of McConnell when he was just announcing that doing the roll call for Kentucky. There's some signs that I still think, even though Nikki Haley showed up because she wants to preserve whatever future she might have in what she thinks may be a return to sanity in the party, I guess, but that's not going to happen either. And I don't think she's going to bridge the gap that's opened over there. I think those Republicans are still gettable by Biden and Democrats and pro-democracy folks, and as we get closer in November.
I asked at the top of the show, whatever happened to Nikki Haley? Of the many Nikki Haleys, I specifically meant the one who was around from like February until April or so. Nikki Haley is not a sympathetic figure to me, and yet I almost felt a slightest tinge of sadness watching her come out there, knowing what was going on in her head, going, this should have come out completely different, and this is not what this party is. And yet she didn't have, say, the courage of a Liz Cheney or so many others, which leads to the question of whether the Republican Party, as we used to know it, ever does reemerge, or is this more of a Trump MAGA type party for at least the foreseeable future?
Oh no, it's a miscalculation on her part that somehow. Her wing, or whatever you want to call it, her flavor of the old Republican Party could somehow ever come back in power. I mean, J.D. Vance's selection alone shows that where this party is headed, and that it's got it is the Donald Trump MAGA, it's Trumpism, and she's got no place there. But I think what you're seeing is what's happened throughout since he came down the escalator. Either you're with him or you're purged, and so you see a lot of people. We've seen it consistently who slowly make the move towards Trumpism, towards MAGA, and then become part of it, become enablers of it, and she's now firmly in that camp.
We're talking to Joe Trippi, longtime political strategist who knows a thing or two about economic populism and delivering effective economic messages. And that's what I wanted to ask you about next, because we've talked about J.D. Vance's brand of fake populism, of saying you're standing for the everyday American worker when everything about your record says otherwise. But he has, obviously, from hillbilly elegy on down, been able to fool just enough people. So the question I'm sure people ask of you from a strategy standpoint is, how do you counter that? How do you let people know exactly that when J.D. Vance and Donald Trump talk about standing with, you know, the middle class and middle of America, there's nothing in their record that indicates it, but you still have to convey that somehow. What's been your advice?
Well, it looks to me like J.D. Vance was handpicked by the billionaires, Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and a bunch of others who you know, Elon's now out there committing $45 million a month to the Trump super PAC. And boy, just by it, just sheer coincidence that 2 days later, J.D. Vance, who they were pushing for VP, becomes the nominee. It's clear. It's all about tax cuts for the rich. And by the way, that we'll pay for it with social cuts in Social Security, Medicare, getting rid of regulations. It's exactly the opposite of what J.D. Vance is going to try to sell people. But the record is there. And his, you know, he's all over the place. I mean, he's only been in the Senate for 2 years. I just think this is a really good pick for those of us who want to defeat Trumpism in November. There's a lot in this record, his record, what he said about women, his position on abortion, on IVF, on just about everything when it comes to women's reproductive freedom and taking those freedoms away. He is going, I think, in places like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, in particular, the blue wall states, going to be a huge target and a big help to defeating Trumpism in those three states.
I would imagine that in swing states like Wisconsin and Michigan, Pennsylvania, elsewhere, it would be too simplistic to say that you can only push either an economic message or a message about saving democracy or a message about social issues such as the Dobbs decision and proposed national abortion bans and things like that. But perhaps I'm wrong. Are there any one of those that you think deserves more emphasis in order to be most effective in a swing state population in the Midwest?
Look, I think all of them. I do think this is going to be a choice election. You have a choice, Wisconsin. You have a choice, America. Do you want national bans on abortion? Or, you know, do you want to reinstate Roe v. Wade? Do you want billionaires getting tax cuts where their plan is to cut? How do they pay for it? By cutting Medicare and Social Security and Head Start programs. Do you want, make the choice on economic terms on all of it. And I think that is why I still believe with all the hand-wringing in the Democratic Party that we are going to defeat Trump in November, that Trump's not going to be, regardless of whether it's Joe Biden or the party moves to somewhere else, that's the choice. Do you want democracy or do you want this, to burn it all down like Trump wants to do? This is the choice you have to face. And yes, you may not be happy with the choice we give you. If people aren't happy with that, but you pick because that's how it's going to go down. And we have to continue to make that case. And we have to continue to say that he's a threat to democracy because he is, and not back away from it. Oh, because that's somehow inviting violence or something.
This is Joe Trippi, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of this break. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show.
Brady joining us live via phone.
I tell the guys before every game, and honestly try to do it before every practice, challenge is going to come. This team is not just going to show up and allow us to walk all over them and win. Really what matters is how are we going to respond to that? And if you can adapt and use it as a learning opportunity, it's going to set you up to go accomplish darn near anything you want to.
I think there are a lot of people that need to hear that message today.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
In music history, it was on this day in 1975 that Bob Marley and the Wailers played a historic concert at London's Lyceum Theater, featuring the version of No Woman, No Cry that became a classic. You can catch the rest of our daily history lesson every morning at 6:50, Monday through Friday. Before we continue on with our conversation with Joe Trippi from the Lincoln Project, a reminder that you can sign up for our daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner. Today's edition includes a mention of National Hot Dog Day, which you can't have without referencing back to our feature story on the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile that still travels through Wisconsin. We talk about, in light of the MLB draft, about some of the big draft picks from the Milwaukee Brewers who never actually played for the Brewers at the major league level. They went on to other teams through trades and acquisitions. And we've got a link to a recent climate check segment we had here on the radio program about Project 2025 and exactly what it is and its impact on the climate and other areas. We're talking in our next half hour to author Jennifer Berkshire, who wrote The War on Education. That's part of our homeroom segment coming up, but let's continue our conversation now with Joe Trippi, longtime political strategist, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, and let's pick up right there on Project 2025, because Joe, again, the audacity, the no longer needing to hide behind coded language. They just put it right out there. 900 pages saying, we dare you to read it. And plenty of people saying, oh, there's so much there. It couldn't possibly all come to fruition. But Joe, there's enough there. And there's enough material for you folks at the Lincoln Project and others to work with. And you certainly have been working at it to get the word out to the public. What all is in today's MAGA manifesto?
Look, that thing's amazing. And what's clear about it, it's so devastatingly bad that we know for a fact that and Rick Wilson talks about this a lot at the Lincoln Project. We know for a fact that they pulled that the stuff in there. And even it was so deadly to Trump and Trumpism in terms of like what they said the quiet part out loud, that's what caused them to have Trump go out and say, I don't know anything about Project 2025. It's all from everything in there about women's reproductive rights to what they want to do on immigration across the board. It is 80% of Americans, when you test any of this stuff, say no way in hell. Which, by the way, I think that fact, the more people Google Project 2025, read the thing yourself. Don't take my word for it or anybody's word for it, or it's particularly not their word for it. Just read it. And you will be with the 80% that say no way. The other thing that happened, I think, was with when the Supreme Court granted the president, you know, pretty much, you know, total immunity or near it. When they made that ruling, one of the things that spiked, and no one's paying attention to it because of everything else that's happened, is that now 53% of Americans and 53% of independents say respond to this question: Donald Trump is a grave threat to democracy and must not return to the Oval Office. 53% of Americans say yes to that. They agree with that statement. So you put that statement, the immunity that the court's given him, and Project 2025, and J.D. Vance riding shotgun with him. And you have the exact way that the American people get to that 53 number against him, at least, I think. And that's why I think that, yeah, is there problems? Do people have concerns about Joe Biden, whether it's economic, age, whatever? I mean, I understand that. But that's why, yes, he can win. The same is true if the party decides or Joe Biden decides to pass the torch. This is a choice election. You can be with the 53% who believe Donald Trump's a grave threat, who look at Project 2025, which is 80% against it when they hear the details. Those are devastating numbers. And J.D. Vance locks that in for him. It wasn't something to move away from it. So, Pat, I really do believe that you're hitting on some of the real points that need to be made as we move forward into November 2024.
And so when people say, well, how can Donald Trump win after hearing all that? You simply look back at 2016, and not just people who voted, but how many people stayed home for various reasons. And how do you motivate them not to get despondent and throw up their hands and just stay home this time around? And I look at this list of former and living Republican office holders, presidential and vice presidential nominees who will not speak at the convention this year. Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, Dan Quayle, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney. And I ask you this, Joe Trippi. So many of them have just decided to go to ground and accept that this is what their old party is. Is that where it's going to stay? Or might we expect, we always talk about the October surprise, in presidential elections. Might we expect, if not necessarily people on this list, but a few more name brand Republicans saying, guys, you know what? We can't do this. We can't let this happen to our country. Or is that too much to hope for?
Well, let's hope for it, but it may be too much to hope for. There hasn't been a whole lot of courage at all. And again, part of it is you're purged forever. You're purged for life in a party that you believed in for your whole life. But I do think that there will be, I just think as this crystallizes to be the choice that I think the Biden people wanted to make it, start making that choice clear in the debate, which went horribly wrong and was probably a bad strategic decision in any case, whether the president performed or not, to debate a liar. But the point is, I think that contrast past their Republican convention, because I think they're going to make that contrast even more clear through doing things like picking J.D. Vance, et cetera, that as that crystallizes, I do think you'll see more voices across from independents, Democrats and Republicans saying, no, this is about democracy. It's about your personal freedom. It's about, do you want NATO to exist or not? Do you want Putin to invade Ukraine and take it all or not? Do you want democracy or this or dictator wannabe? Do you want women's reproductive freedom be decided by the woman and medical professionals, or do you want government in there and government deciding that you can't do IVF, that you can't do it, the contraception is going to be banned, which is all part of Project 2025, by the way. One of the things when you ask about motivation, that thing, 900 pages, has something that should freak out anybody. In other words, you can go to the people of color with this is what he wants to do. You can go to women. This is what he wants to do. You can go to the business community, small business community, and this is what he wants to do. And I think and anybody who's thinking about sitting on the couch knowing this is what's going to happen to me, is going to get off the couch.
And it's a message that will continue coming from Joe Trippi and the folks at the Lincoln Project. Joe, this was a real thrill. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Anytime, all right. Matt.
Back with our homeroom segment next. You're up north.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun.
It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin farm families are not immune to illness, injury, loss, or natural disaster. Now, they've got a shoulder to lean on. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Wednesday. Wisconsin has just become a part of the Farm Rescue Network. Farm Rescue is not new, but it is new to Wisconsin. Dan Erdman, their marketing program manager, says that they recognized immediately that Wisconsin would be a great new addition of states that they service, and he explains what their goals numbers-wise really are.
I don't know that we have a specific number in mind. We launched into Illinois last year, and we had, I think, a half dozen families that we, you know, supported through through harvest, and now planting services this year as well. I don't know. I want to say the sky is the limit, but it's all about just making those connections first. We'd love to see at least a dozen families in Wisconsin that we can help here during harvest. Just about getting the word out and making those connections and finding those families that could use our support.
Dan Erdman, he's the marketing program manager at Farm Rescue. The group started in 2005, but again, are brand new in Wisconsin. If you know a farm family that could use a little help, you can find out more about their services at farmrescue.org.
You're invited to Close Farms and Country Fest in Chippewa County for this year's Farm Technology Days, growing to the tune of success. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the future of agriculture. There's also food trucks, music, and of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 13th through the 15th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
Get more value out of your farm's high tunnels. Join the Oats Workshop, Sustainable High Tunnel Management, on August 1st in Oak Creek. Learn from farmers and ag professionals about controlling temperature, managing soil fertility, and pests. Tour the high tunnels of Village Farmstead, a USDA organic produce farm, and see demonstrations of tools and techniques used to manage permanent raised beds. Visit organicagronomy.org to register and secure your spot today. Oats science-based organic training for agricultural advisors.
The Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation has announced their four finalists for the Farming for the Future Award. They include Tiffany Coleman from Manitowoc County, Josh and Kristen Joseph from Richland County, Jacob and Jennifer Haywish from Waupaca County, Jacob and Eliza Bobolts from Rock County. And there's four finalists for the Outstanding Agriculture Professional Award. That includes Kat Pepper from Sauk County, Travis and Bethany Sen from Polk County, Brooke Trustum from Rock County, and Tammy Wiedenbeck from Grant County. Winners will be announced in December. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Partly cloudy, a bit cooler, and a lot less humid today. We'll get to 74 this afternoon. The wind out of the north at 5 to 15. Tonight, clear 52. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 77 on Friday. Sunshine with a high near 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 54.
...100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and I dedicate a lot of my time going fast. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as Trigney Olson and Pat Kreitlow joins us for the Republican National Convention, Wisconsin Media Row. Be there.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Well, Just a reminder, on this third day of the Republican National Convention, that special coverage across the Civic Media Radio Network continues at 7 o'clock this evening with News Director Terry Bell. And, of course, Todd Alba has his 12 to 2 show afternoons live from the convention site, and he will be joining us here in about 15 minutes. But first, we have this week's homeroom segment where we talk about the value of and the threats to public education. And, boy, we brought out the big guns today. We've got Heather Dubois-Born on from the Wisconsin Public Education Network and the author of The War on Education, Jennifer Berkshire. Heather, Jennifer, nice to have you both here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you bet. So, Jennifer, apparently you and Heather go way back, and you said you've got some Wisconsin connections to education as well.
That's correct. I've got a train going by, and I'm just going to close my window.
Oh, that's okay.
So, yes, my family actually comes from Ashland, way back, and that's one of the places where Heather and I got to go and visit all the way on the shores of the lake. And what was amazing about traveling through Wisconsin was that it really didn't matter who we talked to. People's concerns about the state of their schools and what they would like their schools to look like and do for their kids was remarkably similar. And so I came away from that trip feeling really inspired.
The book is called The Education Wars. I misspoke earlier. The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual, which Heather is holding up now for folks watching on social media. I was going to say Jennifer described the book, but Heather, as our like biggest advocate for public education here in the state, and since you know Jennifer, how about you describe what Jennifer does and what her writings are about, and then we'll let Jennifer rebut.
Or bask in the praise.
That would work too, sure.
This is a fantastic manual for people who are wondering, what are some of the threats that people are facing to their public schools around the country? And more importantly, what are people doing about it to fight back, and what's working? And so I have just delighted in Jennifer's dogged pursuit of this information. For those of you who don't already follow her podcast, Have You Heard? She frequently discusses these topics in great detail and length, and gives us an insight into, you know, what people are doing around the country to fight back. And this book really digs deep into what's working there. And it covers Wisconsin too. So I highly recommend that you pick one up. And if you don't already have a copy, you can grab one at our summer summit, where she's going to be talking about this book and lots of other things.
And that's really what prompted this is, Jennifer, you're coming to the Public Education Network Summer Summit later this month. And so when Heather talks about how dogged you have to be, I mean, we've built this whole weekly segment around it, because if you're not dogged about defending public education, I mean, you seem to know more than anybody, you know, you're losing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's really a key observation, is that it's, you know, we take it for granted, right? That our public schools will always be there. And what people in a number of states are starting to realize is that the institution is actually way more vulnerable than we thought. And that defending it requires, you know, it can't just fall on teachers or even just the parents of kids who attend the local public school, that we need to be much better about putting together a coalition of people who understand why public schools are important, at both as far as the future of kids, but also for our democracy.
Well, it comes back to that whole notion of the public good, and how so much of anything that's prefaced by public has been under attack. Public schools, public transportation, public parks, public health, you name it. And so the point that I think you're making so well here is, even if you sense there's a threat to public education, you can't just leave it to the public educators to do the work. We need everybody in the public to understand it's good. But I suppose, Jennifer, at times you feel like you still have to start at square one and explain why a public education is a public good.
That's right, because we really, you know, all that language about individual choice and markets, you know, that's the air that we breathe. And think about the way that we conceive of higher education. For anyone listening who's, you know, got kids in college or is still paying off having sent kids to college, we think of that as basically an individual good. You put into it, you know, what you want to, you shoulder that debt as your individual responsibility. And I don't think anybody would look at higher ed and think, oh, what a great model. Let's treat K-12 the same way. But that's precisely the direction that we're moving in.
Heather, you wanted to make a point or two about Jennifer, did I? Oh, yeah, there you are. Okay. I wanted to make sure if you had any questions for Jennifer that you wanted to ask as well that you could.
Well, I guess I'm curious as to how you seem to stay so positive in the face of the enormity of these challenges, and what is really giving you hope as you, you know, learn about all of the ways that people are fighting back, because not all of them seem to be entirely successful from where we're sitting. And we certainly feel like we're up against a pretty big mountain here.
That's so true. I was just talking about that yesterday with my husband, who really delights in hearing me talk nonstop about public education all the time. So, you know, I was saying that, you know, on the one hand, when you think about how tense and frankly demoralizing things are at a national level right now, and you guys know it better than anybody because you've got this crazy convention playing out right in your backyard. But then, you know, like I'll spend my days talking to folks who are organizing on the ground. For example, today is the deadline for folks in Nebraska who are gathering signatures to put a voucher initiative on the ballot there. And there has been an unbelievable amount of pressure from policy elites and big money donors not to let Nebraskans vote on this question. And so as a result, you see all kinds of people who probably don't have strong opinions about school vouchers or whether taxpayers should fund religious education, but they really don't like the idea that somebody's trying to keep them from having a voice. And so I look at something like that and I'm like, wow, there, you know, there's something interesting happening there. And that's, you know, not just related to the future of schools, but also to, you know, like, how do we get the country back on track? How do we move in a less extreme direction?
Jennifer Berkshire is our guest on our homeroom segment this week, author of The Education Wars, something that she co-authored along with education scholar Jack Schneider. Now, we can talk, Jennifer, about policy all day long and the complexities of getting a referendum passed or legislation passed. But you know as well as any of us that a big part of the key to success from the political right has been in branding, in very simple branding. So I'm just going to throw two of them at you, well, maybe three of them. And you just talk about how those are essentially empty slogans that cover up so much more. There's parents' rights, there's school choice, and there's religious freedom. Now, in just those six words, conservatives have been able to gain so much ground that undermines a public education. Talk about the challenge of taking on any one, two, or three of those basic marketing titles.
The conservative bumper sticker. I thought for sure you were going to say something about funding students, not systems.
No, that too.
Which, you know, I always joke is the equivalent of saying, you know, fund commuters, not roads. So, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot because I really think that a big part of our challenge as believers in public education is that we're stuck defending something that is now very complex. You know, think about how much time we've spent just trying to unpack the various acronyms that are at the heart of so much of what schools do right now, something like social and emotional learning. And, you know, Heather is great about this because I think she understands that often the parent who is really angry and in your face is mad because they feel like there's something they don't understand. And so as a result, the more complex our world gets and the harder it is for us to explain it, one, we open ourselves up to these sort of easy bumper stickers, religious freedom, right? The there's no downside to that, or parents' rights. But it's also, you know, we're alienating a large part of the public who feels like they don't understand what schools do anymore.
Heather, I'm sure you feel the same way about the chore of taking on bumper sticker slogans, because there's so much more to it.
Yes, and it is important to understand the motivation and the meaning behind some of this messaging. But the more important thing, to Jennifer's point, is to get to the heart of why people are showing up in the first place and connect with each other in ways that really center what kids need and the reasons that our public schools bring us together in the first place, because we want to live in thriving communities. We want our kids to be able to have a joyful, happy education in our public schools. And we want to be part of eliminating any barriers to that. And so that's why I'm super excited to jump into all of these questions deeper at our annual summer summit, which, as you know, Pat, is going to be July 30 to 31st in Madison. The first day, we're going to have an organizing workshop, and we're going to talk about all of the ways that we can come together through the fall election to really center public education advocacy in a nonpartisan way and make sure that we know where all of the candidates stand on these issues. And then after the election, we are going to hold whomever gets elected accountable for delivering a better budget next year so that we can start to make a difference for kids and close some of the gaps that we're seeing and fight back against, you know, rhetoric that's getting in the way of doing what's right for kids. And we're excited to do all of this and really grateful that Jennifer's bringing her own self to the conversation so that we can learn from things people are doing in other states, too.
To learn more about the Summer Summit, as I say often, it would be a very long website to say Wisconsin Public Education Network. And so they were smart enough to shorten it to Wisconsin Network. So go to wisconsinnetwork.org. Or go to wisconsinnetwork.org/summit to learn more about the summer summit. Jennifer, I'd like your impression on, and you don't have to say this just to be nice to Heather, but do you see an increase in more forceful advocacy for public education, or is Wisconsin an outlier and there are still too many other states where there aren't nearly the public education advocates that there should be?
Wisconsin is definitely leading the way, but in many ways, that's just a reflection of the fact that your public schools have been under attack for so long. I've learned so much from Heather, and I would say that one of the things that I find really inspiring about what's happening in Wisconsin is that you're starting to see rural communities join forces with suburban and urban counterparts as they start to feel the effects of school privatization. And think about how significant the rural-urban divide has been in Wisconsin. You all, like, you introduced that to many of us in the wake of the 2016 election. Like, you know, we all ran out and got copies of Kramer's book about rural resentment. Well, you know, what if it turns out that we're able to help repair some of that rift through public education advocacy? So I look at something like the work that Heather is doing as a real inspiration, and I talk about it every chance I get.
Heather, I'm sure we'll now give a version of right back at you, Heather.
Yeah, we are seeing people come together across rural, urban, and suburban communities all over the country, because what impacts our school systems in one community impacts everybody. And I think people who really understand what equity looks like when every single kid in every single public school has the resources they need to succeed and thrive, we can start to unravel all of the ways that our own system isn't equitably meeting the needs of all learners, and we can fight back against that. And so it took a while in Wisconsin for some rural communities to see, for example, the impacts of school privatization and the ways that that tightens the belt even harder on districts that are already kind of you know, doubly damaged by a school finance system that doesn't put kids' needs first, but rather is focused on property values, you know, which is highly problematic, but then is also siphoning money and resources away from kids who need it most. We got to do something about that. And that's why we come together.
So head to wisconsinnetwork.org to learn more about the Summer Summit, and also look up Jennifer Berkshire's book, The Education Wars. Jennifer, so nice to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Safe trip up to Wisconsin. Have a wonderful time when you're here.
Thanks so much. It was a real pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Heather. We'll talk to you again real soon. And coming up next, we'll talk to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show next. You're up north.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You may have heard the word derecho as a part of the weather lately, but what do you know about it? Derecho is a Spanish word meaning direct or straight ahead. It's why you may hear straight line winds blamed for damage from a derecho. A downburst, which is an area of strong, damaging winds, causes a derecho, and the Weather Service does not issue warnings for these. They're just standard severe thunderstorm warnings. So this means you'll want to be weather ready during any severe storm. If you're outside, camping, hiking, boating, find a shelter. Otherwise, lie flat, face down, on low ground. Most derechos happen in July, and Wisconsin typically has one or two per year. But experts say climate change will only help increase these numbers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio. It was on this day in 1968 that the fourth Beatles film, Yellow Submarine, debuted, ending with this song, All Together Now. From Lauren on Facebook, just borrowed a copy of The Education Wars from the library this week. Looking forward to reading it. And Chris Hambuck Boyle, of course, thanks Jennifer and Heather for being part of the show. And again, notes that you can learn more at wisconsinnetwork.org/summit. And one of the big boosters of the Wisconsin Public Education Network is one Todd Alba, who joins us in the midst of a week of covering the Republican National Convention from the convention. Mr. Alba, how's it going so far?
Mr. Kreitler, Mr. Bach, you know, I'm surviving.
know? Wait a minute, we got survival. Right. We got survival music.
There we go. Fantastic.
You are, and we all are having a better week than the unfortunate case of the woman who was singing the national anthem at the Home Run Derby night before last. Greg, I didn't put her statement in front of me, but essentially she said, I'm not going to kid you. I was drunk and I'm heading to rehab.
Yep.
So as much as we all, there's so many bad renditions of the national anthem. We just lumped her into it and only come to realize that now she's realizing she may have a problem and hope she gets the help that she needs.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, I certainly hope she does as well.
I saw somebody make a comment that he said it was a country star, and he said, "I've turned down every offer to sing the national anthem because it's high risk, no reward. If you do well, it's fine, whatever. If you do poorly, you are the butt of the joke." I'm like, I understand that too. Like, I would never do that.
You know, and I've heard a couple of renditions, a couple of good ones, but I don't remember them. So I wouldn't say it was a big reward unless your name is Marvin Gaye. There's really, I mean, you or Whitney Houston, two people who completely reimagined the national anthem, but to do it as is can be somewhat painful. But I'm sure Todd has heard that at the convention. You've heard God Bless the USA as Donald Trump came out on stage with what appeared to be a hotel pillow attached to the side of his head, a bandage which, by the way, wasn't there the day after the shooting, but magically showed up when he was at the convention site. Are other people wearing ear pillows in sympathy to the former president out there?
I think I saw one. Okay. And there was a great meme of a guy that just had like a sanitary napkin attached to his ear, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. I just figured
for all the people that showed up when Trump was in court, they showed up in New York, all in these same suits, the blue suit with the long red tie.
Yeah.
And I, I fully expect the ear bandage is going to become a similar symbol before this campaign is all said and done.
Yeah, they interviewed one sitting Republican congressman. The name escapes me, but he had that an ear bandage on his ear in homage and unity with Trump. So what's your that kind of convention?
Yeah. What's your impression so far? I mean, look, you're filled with a whole lot of Trump supporters, and they're all very upbeat given the way the campaign cycle has gone at this point, when there's still so much time left. But nary a bad thing to say about what's happening inside the convention so far.
I would say a couple of things. A, I think you nailed it, Pat, that Republicans here at the convention are absolutely lockstep unified. I mean, you have the parade of, I guess I was wrong candidates, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis and Ted Cruz and all the rest. You know, on our show, we like to play the thing from Hamilton, you'll be back, wait and see. And they just keep coming back. They just keep coming back to Trump. And so you have that. But here's the thing. They are absolutely unified. Again, you've completely condemned violence in politics. That's a given. But the incident over the weekend has done nothing but absolutely fire these delegates up. And I think the real question, or one of the real questions going into November is, and certainly next month in Chicago, are Democrats going to be able to match that energy, that unity, get behind Joe Biden and say we're going to let differences within our party, within our caucuses go aside and really get behind Joe Biden because the stakes are so high?
I'd like to answer that question. No. No, because that's not what Democratic conventions are usually about. It's somebody or a group.
If that's the case, the Democrats are in real trouble. The nation's in real trouble.
I got a point on that. I'm going to say again, no, because this convention is a blip in the process. The Democratic convention is a blip in the process. The debate was a blip in the process. And in an election that is still 50-50, or what the latest poll was like 46-46, whatever it is. I mean, this is, what do I always liken it to? The Olympic sport of speed skating. The long ones were like for the first seven laps around the oval, they're going super slow. And then that last lap, they are skating like a tiger is chasing them. And that's kind of what this campaign is. And I'm not discounting all of these things that happen, but there's so many people ready to jump on, board right now and say, this thing is over, when every poll indicates, folks, you better pay attention every day between now and then, because you just never know what's going to happen next.
Not saying it's over. I agree with you, Pat. There's a long time, but I do think that, I mean, these people, as you well know, in the Democratic Party, I've seen the Republican Party, the delegates, the people that go, they're the people that lead the charge to register people, to get out the vote, all those kinds of things. And at least on the Republican side, from what I'm seeing, they're ready to go. Tony Zimmerman on Facebook asks, do you agree with Rick Wilson that Ron Johnson is the cheese curd Ted Cruz? Ron Johnson is just a goof. I mean, he gave a very divisive, hateful speech, transphobic speech on the floor here, and then threw his staff under the bus and said, well, my staff loaded the wrong speech on the teleprompter. Give me a break.
But now, at first, I doubted that there was even a kinder, gentler speech version out there, but then they posted a picture of it to Twitter. It had all the transphobic stuff still in it. So, no, it wasn't a kinder, gentler speech. That's not how Ron Johnson works. And then went on, we played the soundbite earlier of Ron Johnson giving an interview where he said, the Secret Service failed because of a DEI hire at the top. So Ron Johnson can't speak without some thinly veiled misogyny or racism coming out, rumor mongering. These are the things he does. So everything's been on brand so far.
I would also say, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of the network coverage. We've been really busy at Panther Arena next to Fiserv. A lot of great press people here, by the way, enjoying talking about some of my colleagues. But this all seems very, quote unquote, normal. And I haven't seen a lot of press talking about this is a unique, unprecedented convention because we've never had in American history, modern American history, a 34-time convicted felon. Last night was supposed to be about keeping America safe again, and they started off endorsing a felon, a criminal. I mean, why we're not talking about got more. I don't know.
I like how Todd just slips in. You know, I was talking to my colleagues, you know, Lester Holt and David Muir and Norah O'Donnell and, you know, Todd Alba. No, all right no. There. His colleagues.
Oh, if only. If only.
More from him coming up at noon.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Crude and Dom.
Tune in to the Hump Day RNC MKE 2024 edition. Devils Advocates, join the Maggie Dawn Show at 3 and do it live from Milwaukee.
The Devils Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
What makes Wisconsin Dells such a big deal? Well, big splashes for one, big rides too, big shows, big boats, and big scenery. The bigger the better. Water parks? They're a pretty big deal around here. Big families? You bet. Small ones too. Mini golf? Big time. 19 plus million gallons of water? No biggie. Water slides? Big, bigger, biggest. Big attractions? Check. Big theme parks? Check. Big meals? Check, please. Wisconsin Dells. Now that's big. Go to wisdells.com and plan your trip today.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.